Женергија, женергија, женергија.
Женергија present the arts.
Live guests, interviews, discussions, exchange, inspiration.
In dialogue between different actors,
artists,
activists,
cultural workers,
cultural institutions,
and cultural policy.
Genergia on Thursdays at 7 p.m.
Donnerstag 19 bis 20 Uhr.
Radio Orange.
Good evening, guten Abend, dobro večer. My name is Zoe Gudović and you listen Genergia present the arts on Radio Orange. And as part of the fellowship program Kultur Gema and the Arts, Genergia expand the format to present the arts. I must say that tonight it's actually the last dance with my beautiful guest. And of course, it's not by accident that it's tonight we talk about the movie and the dance and theory and everything that we all these months go through from different, of course, perspective. So I want to say thanks to everybody who are the somehow like show the wish to be part of this my journey and to I know more people from Vienna's culture scene. Like I said, tonight we will talk about space in which dance and performance theory is not only created, but it's also shared, discussed, and questioned. And we also share the knowledge what its power of the short film and why is short film for everybody. But for all of you who will listen us on Monday from 1 to 2, I want to say Dobar dan, Guten Tag, and be ready for the new journey with my guest. Tonight I have Lisa Mai from Dot Dot Dot, and Lisa is a graduate on the Film Academy Vienna and has been working as a film curator and educator since 2004. And she will much more talk about her experience and interest and everything. And my guest from Tanzquartierer Wien, it's Anna Leon. So I will like to first of all say hello to my guest. Hi.
Hello.
I want to check if it's everything function. Maybe a little bit be closer to the dance with the mic. So I would like to ask both of you, like, does I correct pronounce all the names? Huh?
Yeah.
Lisa, please.
Perfect.
And you are.
Yes.
Okay. And with this, I would like to start like the Genergia present the arts, also bring the music from my guests. And tonight we really, again, we listen something from the choice, favorite songs, but I know that I limited you to be short, so probably like it's something that you will tell us now. What we, Lisa, will listen first?
Yeah, you listen to a song that I was invited to select. Thank you so much. I just realized I was really moved when the song started. And it's something like a dream come true to open a radio show with this song. It's amazing. The composer and also performer is called Vange Leonel. And sadly, she passed away 10 years ago, a Brazilian performer. Not just performer, singer, songwriter, composer, musician, novelist, journalist, and most of all, of course, feminist and queer rights activist. And this song was introduced to me through a short film that we featured 2 years ago at the Dot 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 Festival. And the film was kind of setting the mood for the film. The song was setting the mood for the film, and it was interpreted or covered by another lesbian icon, Celia Duncan, and she played the main role in this film. And it was a community project, kind of, with people from queer communities, and just an amazing film. And that's the first time I heard this song, and it really guided us through the whole festival, actually.
I'm now curious about this movie. Not it's only that you mentioned lesbians, but Anna, how are you?
I am fine, thank you.
You are alive.
Yes, I was late. I was late and I was stressed, but now it's going better.
No, see, no need to be stressed. But we start and Lisa start already to a little bit scratch in the topic of the movie. But Anna, from your biography, I can see that you are a dance historian working and through research, curatorial theory projects, teaching, and dance performance dramaturgy. What does this mean? Yeah, and where does this interest in theoretical reading of dance, ballet, and you do much more? I just now like ask about this.
Okay, I think it's maybe easier to start with where it comes from. It comes from the fact that I grew up in a context where small girls were sent to ballet class. Ah. So I was sent to ballet class when I was 3, my first ballet class. I cried, like many people cry in ballet class. And then at some point I dropped it. And I always felt that I wanted to be in the dance world, but somehow in a different way. And it took many years to realize that I could also do this through theory. So that's how I got there. And at some point, I started like entering this field that we now call critical dance studies, whatever it sounds very. But what it means is that dance reads the world and talks about the world in exactly the same way as other cultural forms. So if our mainstream dominant ideologies of white supremacy, of heteronormativity, of patriarchy, of capitalism, they impregnate cultural products, but also cultural products can respond to them and give different narratives. Dance can also do that. So we are processing this in studying it, basically. And when, like, because the first thing you said is I'm a historian, yes, I think that's the most important thing for me, because at some point I realized that dominant narratives of history leave out quite a lot of stories. And for groups and people who don't have a history, anchoring in the present is very, very difficult. It's like stealing the history, and that's a very violent experience. So kind of that's where I'm coming from.
Mm-hmm. And connect theory, and also now when you start to say why it's important to we also read the dance, like, does you also, you know, like go in historical moment of theory of dance? Does you go so like from the rituals, or because I'm just curious how it's go this theory of dance?
Okay, so there's a problem with historical theories of dance, okay, which is that they recreated the ideologies also that dance recreated. So there's theories of ballet at a time where ballet was basically imperialist culture, and the words that we have, the theories that we have to talk about it, were also imperialist. So now we have to find the ways to also not only talk about new forms of dance, but also talk about them in ways that don't reinforce those ideologies.
Mm-hmm. It's really complex.
Sorry.
This is why I ask you what this means. You know, like, but probably
mean?
We need more and more to talk. But Lisa, we scratch a little bit history, theory, dance, ballet, mm-hmm. and but for example, from your biography, I see that you involve in development of inclusive. And I also curious this barrier-free strategy for film education. And also you do this particularly for a young audience. First of all, I'm a little bit this curious. See, because in Genergia I learn a lot, and especially through Present the Arts, because all of you like bring different. What is this barrier-free strategies,
Yeah, basically, for the past 20 years, I've been keeping myself busy with working with short film, mm-hmm. mostly as a curator or festival programmer or educator in mm-hmm. some cases. And for the past 10 years of that period of time, I've been thinking a lot about who we are inviting. So basically, that's the curiosity that sparked this new journey in this very long journey. And also the need to change some things in my work, I think. So 10 years ago, I really felt the need to change the direction, or to give it like a meaningful new boost. Because I've been doing what I've been doing for 10 years, and it's an amazing job to be able to work with artwork and artists, and to be able to present short films and filmmakers and get people inspire conversations and whatever we everything that we can do together. But I was wondering if that's everything, like create the space for this piece of art. And I was really curious about this question, who are we opening the space for? And that's when this started. And I think barrier free is maybe not even the perfect term for it, maybe more like reducing barriers, possibly. But I think it's like a provocative, definitely a provocative term. You know, it's something that you have to think about. Is it actually something that's applicable to your project? Can a project or a space ever be barrier free? So is it even possible? And the answer is, I think, no. Mm-hmm. So, but you have to really think, who are you inviting and who are you not inviting? And that's what I think is interesting. And that's where I started to work with film specifically, to focus on the media itself. Like it's a medium that works with sound and vision. And what does that mean? Who does it include? And who doesn't it invite to enjoy? And aside from that, of course, the spaces that we use are like cinema halls or public spaces with public access, etc. And from then on, the journey continued. And now we've also been working a lot with young audiences, which is just amazing. It's a huge learning process. It's just wonderful. And such a special project to try to think how you can bring these amazing films to a super young audience. And what is it that they need? What kind of a space and what kind of educational program do they need so they can enjoy it and so that it inspires them to take something home, take something to kindergarten, use it, whatever, do with the messages whatever they want.
Mm-hmm. And on this, you start a little bit direct us in the question how and why you start ...
Yeah, exactly. That's actually just the point why I started it. I think I'd been working...
It started, in
2015, we started the ... festival. And also ... as a Verein. We're celebrating 10 years of Open Air Short Film Festival this summer. Jens, really, sometimes I wonder, how did we get there and why is time flying? I don't know. How did it happen? But I think there's so much more that we have to really work on and explore and learn and educate ourselves. It's been an interesting journey with very few inputs available, actually, and a lot that we had to just explore, try, trial and error, and
Mm-hmm. And Anna, I will go like a little bit in similar direction to ask you. Okay, I know that Tanzquartiere Wien, it's big, but you are particularly focused on theoretical part. Why and how it started? How start Tanzquartiere and where it's your role with the theory?
Okay, so Tanzquartiere started a bit more than 20 years ago, and it started because independent artists, so dance artists, asked the city of Vienna to have an institution. So Tanzquartiere is actually the result of independent artists lobbying the city to have an institution for contemporary dance and performance. And it was part of the requirements, let's say, in this history to have a performance program, a research program, a residency program, and a theory program. So basically my work, my job, my position exists because artists ask for it. It's a position that doesn't exist in many dance institutions. So when I arrived in 2022, it was a bit of a situation of, okay, what does this mean? Like you said before, and what do I do with it? So I improvised a lot. Some of the things that I do are very standard, like theory lectures, like inviting someone to give a lecture. Other things are attempts to bring together artists and curators and activists and theorists in one space to see what happens when you put all of them in one space. Other things are working with universities. and also inviting people to do part of the theory program so that we don't only hear my voice and that there is people who are much more experts in certain topics that can, you know, contribute to it. So, but I know that if I started the job again now, I would do it in a completely different way. It's a very, very open position.
Mm-hmm. And something that, like you mentioned, Tanz Quartierer Wien have a different segments. Mm-hmm. And you say your position is open because artists ask for this. But then what is the product of the part that theory bring to the artist? What you bring to the need of the artist? Clarification, reading, or what is happening in the process?
Okay, so officially speaking, let's say my role is also to be a kind of bridge between theory that is produced in university context, theory that is produced internationally, and the local artistic scene. On a more practical way, I think the honest answer is that I cannot control what artists take out of my program. It's very difficult to predict. It's very difficult to. But what I hope is that I'm somehow, because 90% of my program is critical theory, so it's a way of introducing ideas that make us question, what do we mean when we say body? What do we mean when we say movement? What do we mean when we put bodies that are only thin, only upright, only very mobile, that have specific concepts of beauty on the stage? And to bring in concepts that can help us question this, because practice without these critical concepts just reinforces the same and the same and the same. So I hope that this is what I'm doing, but it's very difficult to tell if I'm actually doing it, you know.
But this is very interesting. Mm. Huh? I really like it. Okay, and we will now listen Clara. Maybe you say why you choose Anna Clara Luciani.
Okay, because I was feeling very bad when Lisa gave when you gave your answer about your song, because I was thinking, God, I'm very superficial. When you asked for the songs, I just looked on Spotify, what did I hear that morning? And I thought, this is really commercial, superficial pop music. And then I thought that in the cultural field, I am not supposed to like these songs. You know, I'm supposed to be embarrassed to like these songs. And then I thought, no, that's just classist, it's bad, and I will send this song. So this is commercial pop music from France. The only justification is that it's a very nice song about domestic abuse against women. But actually, it's just basically disco aesthetics that I really like.
And I also must admit you that I listen and dance all the time. So now listen.
T'es comme un voile qui s'accroche à tous les clous. Tu t'effiloches, tu t'abîmes à tous les coups. Tu te fais du mal. Love.
And we're back. Radio Orange. My name is Zoe Gudovic. You listen to Genergia present the arts. And I really enjoy with my guest Lisa Mai, and Anna Leon from Tanzquartierer Wien. And Lisa, in one moment, say listening this song that we are already start to have a party, morning party, like in the evening, like feminists, like but to talk about families, actually, like a movie festival. And Lisa, I will like to you a little bit tell about why you say that short film it's for everyone. This is first, I'm curious. And what are the challenges? And yet what are the adventure of working on a short film? And I also like, what is the quality of the film itself? What is important in this? Or how do you determine what we represent as a short film?
It's a huge question.
I know.
But like over the 20 years, I found a very short answer to it.
Okay. Yeah.
I will try it on you. I think like what's most intriguing for me with the short film is that it's not taking space, but it's giving space. And I think now we can go into the discussion and talk much more. But basically, I think that's the answer for myself, because I've had this question, of course, why is it so interesting for me? What is it like with the short format? Why is it so inspiring for me to watch short films and to reflect on them and rewatch them and rewatch them? Basically, that's it. And from the perspective of filmmakers or artists, I think it's the amazing possibilities of taking risks. In a short format, you can really dive into taking risks. And I think it's hard if you have like a huge production going on that's for television or for the cinema release, for instance. I think that's really, really hard to really fight for your artistic vision and for risks that you want to take on the issues that you want to talk about or on the way you want to do your art. And I think that's really difficult. But with short formats, it's always easier, of course, also thinking of funding, of course, the budget that you need to create art. And there are more creative ways also to get short films funded and more off mainstream sources, sort of. And the question, what is a short film? Of course, I've heard it many times in these 20 years. It's also a very short answer, but I stole it from somebody else from the field. Mm-hmm. And the answer is, it's shorter than a long film. And that's the only valid answer. It's just a short format and it can be anything. And of course, for some festivals, it's very specific. If there are films that have I don't really see why films have to compete with each other. I just want to present art. True. But most film festivals, also short film festivals, are showcase festivals with competitions. And there are different criteria. And one of these criteria is the length of the film. And some say a short film is something between 1 and 10 minutes. Others interpret it as 1 to 30 minutes, but it really doesn't matter. I think it's like the quality is in the format, so mm-hmm. that's where the quality is of this kind of art.
But when you say quality, it's in the format. Mm-hmm. For example, what is this means quality?
It's like the in the endless opportunity in these endless opportunities. I think the films that really touch me, shake me, really keep me thinking about what I just saw and experienced for a long time, and something that I really want to take with me for a while. I think these are the films where the format and the content basically have this perfect poetic liaison or something. If you want to tell a huge story that is designed for a 90-minute feature film, it's perfectly fine. I love 90-minute feature films if they are good films and interesting and relevant films. But if you want to put that into a 10-minute film, it will be really stressful and not a really nice experience. And I think that's where you can go wrong easily if you try to press something into a format that doesn't doesn't go well with what you want to talk about. Yeah.
And okay, of course you open now a million of the stuff that I want to ask you, but I will. Okay, maybe I will back. I will like to ask you, Anna, why it's important to open a space to present access to new trends in international dance and performance research to the audience and local experts and promote exchange between theory and practice, science and dance choreography, especially in university education?
Okay, so first of all, it's important, but I always try to tell myself that, you know, a vaccine for an illness that cannot be cured is important. What we do, it's important in a relative framework. I kind of try to remind myself a little bit. To focus, I think, in the last part of your question at the university level, because it's the easiest thing in order to understand why in practice it makes sense to bring theory and practice together. It's let's take a specific project, sorry, that we do in Tanzkultur, which is called Doing Things with Theory, and it brings students from theory backgrounds. So, for example, theater, film, and media studies at the University of Vienna to do workshops with students from practice backgrounds, so from dance schools. And putting these students in the same room to work together very intensely for 1 week, it's an ephemeral concept, an ephemeral situation, but what it does is that it makes sure that they have met each other and that they have worked with each other, because otherwise you have students graduating from theater, film, and media studies and then getting a job as curators, getting a job as journalists, getting a job as communication managers writing about works. They get jobs at the Emma Sieben and they decide who gets money or not. And if they have never been in a studio with artists, the way they read the concepts, the way they read the applications, the way they understand what they're seeing is somehow reading it through only the glasses of what they've learned in an academic context. And I find this very, very problematic. And also for artists to have been in a space with people who come from a theoretical background, because the methodologies are very different, and to have been at least a little bit in contact with how people think outside of the studio in order to be able to communicate a little bit more in each other's terms. So that would be one very specific example, but I think that it's quite important, actually, because I know that there is a lot to be done in the way in which artistic projects have a pressure to put themselves into words, and the way in which curatorial programs then rearticulate these pieces and what this happens in this translation. So somehow that's the space where I have to intervene.
But now when you say a little bit critique on this formal, in the context, in the formal education, you know, like, and I now try to think about informal in some kind of like education that are more alternative discourse. Does you know the spaces that it's, for example, in Vienna, open this kind of reading through the theory, some kind of artistic practice? That it's not connect with, I don't know, this university or institution, because for me, it's very specific language that you use.
Yes. And that's because I also come from a specific background, and I work half the time in Tanzkultur and half the time in university. So that's also where I come from, basically. But what I said before, it's not to say that theory only is produced in university or that only is produced in institutions. It's produced by activists all the time. It's produced by artists all the time. It's produced by practitioners all the time. But this theory, unfortunately, very rarely has access to institutional positions later, which means that it has to have a platform. It has to be part of a program like mine. But we also have to make sure that the people who are in the kind of formal pathway, that are the ones who are going to have facilitated access for a position at Emma Zibin, for a position in, I don't know, curating Tam Scott-Tier's performance program, that this comes from a pathway that, for not very good reasons, is basically coming from academic education.
Yeah.
And therefore, we also have to concentrate on that, on what these people are exposed to.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and wow. So probably one of the songs we will skip if it's okay with two of you. Because I will much more like to listen, because it's very, very interesting. Of course, million of the question I have now for both of you from the format of how you call the short film if you record with a mobile phone. But I will much more go in the question of both of you are part of the Arts Network, and this is how I start to personally know many of the people. Of course, that I before this hear about all the institutions, but give me opportunity to be a little bit direct, know each other. So I would like to see, like, or ask you, Lisa, what it's for you important to be a member of the Arts Network? And I always ask here, what you need more? What is the adventure, or what is the, what should be encouraged more? I don't know.
That's a good question. We have been a observer of the arts for some months and only a member since this year, because we didn't get the first train, so we caught the second one. And I think for me, it has been an amazing experience so far. I think mostly because, like, the film industry specifically, and also, of course, the even smaller film festival industry, it's really a very tight bubble. And it's very, very healthy for me to get out of it and to encourage encounters for myself and conversations with lots of people from other art projects and institutions. It's really, really vital and important. And for me personally, I'm not a very outgoing person, so I really need these opportunities also to push me a bit, to really also take risks myself and educate myself more, get some encouragement for the projects that we're doing. And basically the arts, from my perspective, as I have experienced it now, is a huge project to join forces. And it's so amazing to basically be in a room finally, or also in a metaphorical room, with so many people who have also tried similar things, and now we can bring our experiences together, exchange knowledge, and empower us. And I think it will have like a snowball effect. That's what my dream. It's going to be an amazing thing, and it will revolutionize the city and Austria and the world, hopefully. So that's my dream of it. And I think for myself, I think hard to say, what do I wish for? I wish for actually myself, maybe, to attend meetings and meetups even more, to push myself even harder to make the best of everything that the arts has created, which is amazing. And dive in completely, full-heartedly,
Mm-hmm. And maybe, Anna, to go in the line, like, what it's for Tanzquartier Wien, like, benefit, or what you find that it's challenging to be part of the Arts Network?
I can say that because several colleagues have joined different meetings, but I'm the one who has joined all of them since we joined a year ago, approximately. And for me, it has already been an empowering experience, because I realized from the very first time that I went to one of the DArts meetings that I censor myself in my work. Like, I have experiences of discrimination that I felt blocked in talking about, not because anyone is telling me don't talk about this, but because somehow, I don't know, the walls of the institution, the history of the institution, there's a weight to it. And having this community has been very helpful to just name this and then go on and do things differently. So it has had an impact. I think that the most difficult and challenging thing is that for a big institution, transformation is very slow. And this doesn't have to do only with how much motivation there is. I think that pragmatically it's slow and it's very frustrating sometimes.
So actually you think that, that the process that are direct in the network to ventilate and change the institution need patience?
Yes, I think definitely they need patience because they also need a very wide range of agents coming together. So we also need, you know, media that would be critical to discrimination, that would then talk about anti-discriminatory curatorial practices. We need people from funding institutions and juries to be in D-Art so that also diversity comes at the level of which projects and which proposals are being funded. We need a whole ecosystem to work around this. And big institutions, they have both a very big responsibility because they have a lot of power to do this, but they also have a very deeply entrenched way of working that with the best of motivation, it takes a long time to change, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about changes, we also talk about the plans now and for the future. So, Anna, what is the plan for this year and for the future for dot, dot, dot?
That's a good question. I think essentially it's creating good spaces for conversations. I think that's like what I would like to continue working on. I think we don't have any specific plans that I could like hand over to you right now, aside from very very quietly celebrating an anniversary year. We're not a festival that's known for its amazing and loud parties, not at all. Like what we're doing is we want to screen artwork and we want to talk about it and we want to work on it in workshops and discuss it. And invites people to participate who have maybe never been to the cinema or hardly ever go or don't even know that short film can be really interesting and inspiring. And it's opening up so much space for your own ideas. It's not taking it all away like a long, long, long film where after 3 hours you walk out of the cinema and you can't even remember what you just saw. So it gives everything back to you. So like a painting or a poem. And basically, I think the important thing is to continue creating these spaces, but even more focused on the diversity of society and the possibilities that change brings. So I think just stick with it and work, do better work and more precise work and with more open eyes and ears and everything, yeah. I think that's our program for the anniversary year. So no party, sorry. It's just like the festival. Come.
Come to the festival. This is true. But in one moment when actually Anna asked you how are the what did we call this young youth? And then you start to tell us really that it's festival where come families and really very really young. Maybe it will be really interesting to you say this.
Yeah, definitely. So dot 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 with the Verein dot dot dot, we're hosting two different festivals. For 10 years it's been the dot 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 open air festival, and in few weeks now we are going to open the third edition of our children's film festival Kikiriki. So it's the third edition, and definitely, so this is a really precious project and very close to my heart and basically in my heart, and we will definitely continue working with it because in this time and age where digital media and audiovisual media, it's all around us and we come into this world with smartphones and tablets that's like wear it from the very beginning basically, and it's the center of the kitchen table, basically, for the family, and you can't deny it. It's there. And it's really important to, from early on, really early on, to just educate and emancipate children how they could deal with this kind of media. It's like bombs dropping on you when you just let children watch YouTube channels in their stroller while you're at the supermarket or taking a walk. You can also curate it. You can also give advice, etc. So I think it's even, so we'll also stick with that. That's really important.
Mm-hmm. And it's important, one of the stuff that you say, that it's not only education for the kids, but also for the parents.
Oh, yes. That's an experience that we regularly made. And also that's the idea behind the festival. It's, the adults are obviously the people who are living with the children who are attending the festival. And we want to encourage conversations that take place at home. And we want to encourage experiences that you can have together. Because when you have like a busy life, you have to have your job, you have to manage a household, you want to educate your children, give them the best education possible and the most loving family background that they can have. But in all this buzzing life, when is the time actually when we sit and we can just watch something, observe something, like with time and peace, you know, just sit and observe, and your mind opens, and you see something new that you had never seen or in a film if it had just like been swiped away on YouTube or something. So it's a really interesting and valuable experience, and I think like watching and observing the adults who are coming to the festival. We see how their behavior really changes. Like first they come and want to leave the kids there and then lie back and their mind goes blank. You can really see it. And then suddenly the movies come on and the conversation starts with the kids and we're having workshops and suddenly everybody's in it together.
Mm-hmm. Okay, see, education in any level. And Anna, for you, it's the question, like, what is the plan now? And what is the plan for the future? And I would like to now tell us about the Tanzquartier Wien. But I'm curious now when you mentioned that you are in the boat in university. What is your plan also? Maybe you surprise us that we can all come to listen to you. Because I mean, like, really, you inspire a lot.
Thank you. Okay, so I can tell you a couple of things that are coming up in the theory program in Tanzquartier. Because maybe this also helps people understand, like with specific examples, what we're doing. On the 21st of April, we have an event on critical and plural perspectives on Jewishness. So thinking about Jewishness beyond the nation state, which especially at the moment is one of the most important things we should do, to think about it in relation to diaspora, to think about it in relation to intersectionality. And we have lecture performances, and there's a meal, and I will cook it. So that's, you know, for me, a very, very important day. Then there is an affiliation that starts. So someone invited to contribute to the program who's called Jette Buchschenschutz, and her topic is to think about negative feelings like depression as the result of social oppressions, inequalities, and structural issues, and not as kind of an individualist problem. And the last thing, what can I say? That in 15th of June, we have a bad ballet masterclass. So to really practice ballet, how we're not supposed to practice it in a way that doesn't make people cry. And after that, I'm doing a kind of talk that's between my Tanzquartier and my university work. And my university work is a very nerdy research project about ballet in Greece in the early 20th century. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pop. How to tell you, like, very rich research. You will have a lot of job. No, like, honest. Okay. Very, very, very short. Lisa, where people can inform about ...
I think it's best to just go to our website, ... .at. So that was confusing, but it's like...
Anna, you, where it people
same,
can...
Same. The task with your website, just... Put it in a search engine, not Google, because Google is bad, but a search engine, and you will find it online.
And you will find all of them in social media. I find them in the Instagram and Facebook. And we will close this, my journey, with Present the Arts with the song of Queen, Radio Gaga. And why is this song important for you, Anna?
Because I love Freddie Mercury. Punkt. That's it. I love Freddie Mercury. And he sings about the radio. So
I appreciate this short. Okay. Dear Leute, my name is Zoe. We'll listen Anna and Lisa tonight. Thanks that you was my guest.
Thank you.
And I really enjoy with both of you, of course, million of the questions. But one of the things that I want to say in the end of this part of my journey, of course, Genergia will back in May in the regular format and have a guest and dedicate 1 hour to the guest. But I want to say, say thanks to Kulturgema for the fellowship program and that they choose me to be fellow of the arts. I want to say the arts thanks a lot for trust that we are, you know, dance this wild dance together in Present the Arts. I want to say thanks to Radio Orange for actually give opportunity for Genergia Present the Arts to have an extra slot on Monday from 1 to 2 in culture part. And I want to say thanks to everybody who was my guest. And this is 21 voices, 21 people, 21 organization. And I'm really, really proud that I make some kind of audio archive for the future steps and that we remind maybe in what it's happened now. So we will listen Queen, Radio Gaga, and we will stay in touch.
We might miss you when we go.
Genergia present the arts,
artists,
activists,
cultural workers,
cultural institutions,
and cultural policy.
Radio Orange.
Orange 94.0, das Freiradio in Wien.
Uns war wichtig, ein zukunftsfähiges System in der Tierhaltung zu installieren. Wir wollen eine Lösung für sämtliche Kritikpunkte, die es an Landwirtschaft, Tierhaltung generell gibt, bieten.
Pelzfreies Europa-Kampagne, das war eine europäische Bürgerinitiative. Kein Thema hat es geschafft, in 9 Monaten mit diesem Instrument 1,5 Millionen Unterschriften zu sammeln.
Das ist nicht lustig und ich verstehe es zwar, dass Medien das so darstellen wollen, weil die brauchen vielleicht auch mal eine nette Tiermeldung.
Wir können das Meer nicht schützen, während wir es gleichzeitig wegessen.
Wir waren ja auch in Österreich das allererste Land der Welt, das so ein Wildtierverbot im Zirkus erreicht hat.
Das Tierrechtsradio. Jeden Freitag um 10 Uhr.
Im Interesse. Politik und Gesellschaft. Auf Orange 94.0.
Ich verbinde mit Radio Orange Multiperspektivität und Mehrsprachigkeit. Ich verbinde damit einen großen Freiraum für Experimentieren und ein Lautstellen marginalisierter Stimmen.
Wie wichtig und wie umfassend so ein nicht kommerzielles Radio ist und auch gesellschaftspolitisch und gerade eben für Minderheiten, für diskriminierte Gruppen.
Die medienpolitische Partizipation von einer ganz großen Bevölkerungsschicht, die in anderen Medien wenig gehört wird.
Ich fühle mich angesprochen. Radio Orange für mich bedeutet viel, vor allem mit diesen vielfältigen Sprachen. Ich kann Sendungen in meiner Muttersprache hören. Ich kann auch Menschen in ihrer Muttersprache interviewen. Diese Anerkennung von anderen Sprachen, von dieser Vielfältigkeit in Österreich, bedeutet für mich sehr viel.
20 Uhr
Radio Positiv.
21 Uhr
Witches on Air.
23 Uhr
Koja's Urban Show. The best of hip-hop, R&B, dancer and of course some UK flavor.
7 Uhr
Venus Frequency, the yogic edition. World contemporary tunes underlined by all kinds of yogic topics in support of a more mindful world.
Orange 94.0, das Freiradio in Wien.